You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online at wdiy.org by clicking Listen Online. Today is June 4th, 2014. Sorry, I'm starting giggling over that. Listen, sorry. I'm going to be in a silly mood tonight. So anyway, today is June 4th, 2014. Welcome to the show. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 16,737, the NASDAQ at 4,251, and the S&P at 1927. Last week, I discussed what a financial advisor was and all the associated designations that one might have in that field. Tonight, I am taking listeners' questions and reviewing typical financial planning questions that we run into. So some of the questions that I'll cover will be questions from past shows, and then some of the related information around those questions, as well as taking questions live. If you are interested in calling, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Questions can be live on air or off air, whatever you're most comfortable with, but we are live. Judy Ann is here, and she will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. If your question is off air, just give your question to her, and she will bring it into the studio for me. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. But again, the number is 610-758-8810. Questions may also be submitted through yourfinancialchoices.com. So we hope that we have some listeners who have some questions and can give us a call. I know it's an okay evening tonight, but a little cloudy. So a good night to kind of stay in and listen to the radio. And hopefully we can help you here. For the folks who haven't heard the show before, I just want to mention that it is educational. We try to provide financial education for our listeners in the hopes that you will be informed enough to know when to ask questions, to be proactive in your financial choices, to have those red flags kick in so you benefit from being proactive, all right? So some of the typical questions that I get, usually the retirement shows and the estate planning shows are the most popular. And frankly, they're the most fun for me as well. I love talking about retirement, estate planning, and income taxes as well is always good for me too. But we talked so much about income taxes earlier in the year. I think people may not want to even think about income taxes anymore. They may be in denial. I will mention something about income taxes, though. We do have an estimated tax payment date coming up on June 15th. So I do want to talk about that a little bit. We do have a call. Yay. We have Roseanne from Bethlehem. Roseanne, can you hear me? Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
Yay. Thanks for calling. These are my favorite shows. I love when people have questions. How can I help you?
Well, my question, and it may be silly, but I'm not very familiar with this, is if you earn a certain amount of money, your Social Security income can be taxed.
Right.
But how about if you're just starting to collect Social Security, say, towards the end of a year, and that whole year you've worked, Mm-hmm. How do you deal with the taxes based on, you know, are you going to be jeopardized because you have that income up until your Social Security?
Yes, when you're talking about the taxation of the Social Security, the calculation comes in based on your page one income. It doesn't matter when you started collecting Social Security as far as how it gets income taxed. I'm just going to digress for one moment because I want to say sometimes people might confuse that with when people start collecting Social Security mid-year. If they're under full retirement age, they may have to pay back benefits. So sometimes if you start collecting mid-year and you had retired, you wouldn't be subject to that payback period because you started later in the year. But for income taxation of Social Security, it does factor in whatever your page one income is for the year. So if you earned, and don't tell me what you earned, but let's pretend you earned $100,000 and your Social Security was $5,000 for the last couple months.
Right.
It would be 85% includable because you're over the threshold. So there's a calculation depending on your filing status. And if you are over certain thresholds, then yes, some of the Social Security will be income taxed up to and not more than 85% includable. So in my example, it would be $5,000, 85% times that, which I can't do in my head. Mm-hmm. Let's say it's $4,000 would be includable on page one.
Okay. What I guess if you can manage to do it and wait a couple more months until the next year, would it make sense to do that and not start your Social Security?
Yes. I mean, I do review that with people. That's what I would sometimes suggest. As long as you have cash flow,
right.
And if you've planned ahead, this is the benefit of being proactive. If you've planned ahead, you may have saved enough money to get you through those last couple months for your cash flow, mm-hmm. such that you start collecting in January, you start with a clean slate. And what's really wonderful, Roseanne, is if you don't have any other benefits like pension benefits and you're not having to take your IRAs, you may be able to do some nice tax planning with, you know, converting money from IRA to Roth or, you know, playing your tax brackets in certain ways.
Okay.
So that's something to do as well.
Well, that's really good to know.
Okay.
Really gives me something to think about.
All right. Great. Thank you for calling. I appreciate
sure.
it.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Roseanne. Folks, the topic tonight is listeners' questions. So if you have questions that you'd like answered, or, you know, just concepts to kind of go through, financial planning concepts, the lines are open. The number is 610-758-8810 or through email yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, I love Social Security questions as well. And that is often a question we get as well, which is when should I collect Social Security? So I'm going to go to that for a moment. And then when we come back from our next break, I'll talk about IRAs and retirement. But since Roseanne called about Social Security, when people call and say, when should I collect Social Security, there are a lot of factors that go into answering that question. One thing you heard me already mention to Roseanne is cash flow. Can you afford not to collect Social Security? Because sometimes your cash flow is going to warrant that you need to. We don't want you putting, you know, your living expenses on a credit card. But some factors are cash flow. Do you have enough money to not do that? Sometimes folks will postpone Social Security to build up additional benefits and maybe use retirement monies to fill their cash flow needs. If they're old enough, their qualified distributions from retirement accounts, that may be an option. So you start kind of whittling away at your retirement account while your Social Security benefit builds up. So lots of different factors on that. We have another call from Catasauqua. We have Cindy, who has a follow-up question, it looks like. Hi, Cindy. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. How can I help you?
Well, in follow-up to the last caller,
uh-huh.
even though the Social Security would be taxable, is there sometimes when some income is better than, I mean, not some income, but some money is better than no money, even if a portion of it is taxable? What's the downside to to having to pay tax on it if you end up having more income, more money.
Right. That's one of the factors you have to consider, which I was starting to talk about probably when you were calling in, that there are factors. No. This is great. So, because that's a good point, and that's how some people think. It's like, well, net, we're still way ahead, right? I mean, we still have more money in our pocket even after paying taxes. So in my example earlier with Roseanne, if the last 2 months' benefit totaled $5,000, $4,000 was taxable, let's pretend she's in a 25% tax bracket, she pays $1,000 of tax, she still has $4,000 in her pocket. So the question is that still worth it? Sometimes, but it depends on how early someone might collect. If they're at full retirement age, you're right. Maybe that makes sense just to go ahead and collect because there's no downside. They have to collect anyway. Or they could postpone it. If you wait and postpone collecting Social Security beyond full retirement age, you actually get an 8% premium every year on that benefit. So, Cindy, what sometimes happens is if you can defer collecting Social Security such that you're eligible for a higher payment over your lifetime, that might be a better deal than getting the $4,000 in your pocket today.
Okay, I understand that, but if I've pretty much made up my mind that I want to collect Social Security at 62, and my husband is 2 years younger than I am, and he will continue working for 2 years, while I'll be on Social Security, could that be a bad situation as far as not if? And I'm saying not that if we don't need the money, but I've made up my mind I want to do it. So, is there really a downside other than I understand what I could get by delaying or waiting till full retirement? Is there any downside? Could I ever be in the negative, or will I always be ahead of the game, even paying tax on it?
Well, you will have more cash in your pocket today if you ran a different scenario by delaying, and let's say you live to be age 90, then you might have benefited significantly by waiting and postponing, because when you collect at 62, you have a permanent reduction for the rest of your life, like a 35% reduction, permanent reduction. So, if you live till 90, it might not have been a good decision. If you live to 64, it was a great decision, you know. So, and I've had people tell me that they have a short life expectancy. They plan they're not going to live that long, and they say then it's definitely worth it in that case. So, you have to factor in life expectancy, cash flow, and taxes is just one little other factor.
But is there ever a threshold where 100% of your Social Security could be taxable in a given year?
No, it's capped at 85% includable, and that, again, depends on your filing status and how much other income you have on your return.
Okay, gotcha. Very good.
All right, thank you, Cindy. Take care. Folks, we're going to take a quick break, Jeff. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue. The phone number is 610-758-8810.
Do you have vinyl albums or 45s on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the records, and you will receive a tax deduction. For more information or to arrange for drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 extension 3 or visit WDIY.org.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are taking listeners' questions this evening, either live on air, which is the most fun for me, and or off air, whatever you're most comfortable with. Judy Ann is in the studio this evening taking calls, so she can write the question down and bring it in to me. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We've already had a couple great calls. Love them and love that they're from women. I was at a women's summit yesterday at Cedar Crest College, a lovely event, and I highly recommend it. It's an annual event, and a lot of great inspiration and motivation there. So it was a privilege to be able to attend. So Cindy and Roseanne had called and were asking about Social Security, which is also another one of those great topics. I want to mention with Social Security folks that if you haven't received one of your benefit statements recently, because they stopped mailing them out years ago, you can go online at ssa.gov, SSA for Social Security Administration, ssa.gov, and input certain information and obtain your current benefit statement. That's a great place to start when you're trying to make these decisions, because it will show you what your benefit will be at early retirement, which is 62, and what it will be at full retirement, depending on what year you were born. And if I'm remembering right, gosh, I think it might even show what the benefit is at age 70. The other thing to keep in mind with Social Security is when you're married, that there are also additional factors for you to consider, because there's several different kinds of benefits with Social Security. There are your earned benefit. That means it's your work record. So there's your earned benefit. There's your spousal benefit. So you may be eligible to collect Social Security based on your spouse's work record. And then there's also survivor benefits. There's disability benefits as well, but as you know, that requires you to be considered disabled. So without being disabled, the benefits available are earned benefits, your spousal benefit if you're married, and or your survivor benefit. Okay. And lots of options, lots of factors with Social Security, and you have to know the right things to question and ask. Sometimes if you go into the Social Security office, I'm not sure if they're always telling you all your options. Some offices may, some assistants may mention this. You want to be very clear on what you're choosing, because once you have applied for the benefit, there's very rare circumstances that you can reverse what you've done. So just make sure you know what you're doing when you go in and understand all the options, and factor in your life expectancy too. I think that's really, really important. And a lot of people don't consider that, because there is quite a difference over your lifetime if you live that long. I think a lot of people are concerned that Social Security is going to go bankrupt. So the idea is get it while you can. You know, I have had representatives from Social Security on the show. They seem to feel that it will be resolved. There will be maybe some adjustments to it, hence that it would not go bankrupt. So it's all your perspective. And I think that must be part of a personal decision for you. So folks who feel like it's going to go bankrupt, they may be more inclined to collect early. Other people may have more faith in it and will wait. And those people who wait, if it never goes bankrupt, may benefit from the higher benefits by virtue of them waiting. Okay, so that's Social Security. And again, some of it could be taxable, and it's not always taxable, folks. If the only thing you have is Social Security, that's not going to be taxable. The amount of taxation on Social Security all depends on your other income. So Social Security is an aspect of retirement planning, much as IRAs are, and that is a common question. How much can I put into my IRA? The amount you can put into your IRA is $5,500 and an extra $1,000 if you're over 50. So that brings you up to $6,500 if you're over 50. And that applies to a regular IRA, traditional IRA, we would call that, or to a Roth IRA. And we will talk a little bit about 401ks in a moment. We had a call come in off air. Chris from Bethlehem said he's married, no children, and is upgrading his home. He's buying a new house. Should he consider life insurance to protect his wife, who doesn't make as much money? Well, this is a very timely question, because I was having a conversation with someone about this very thing right before the show started. So I've got you covered, Chris. Life insurance, if you go on the website, WDIY.org's website. We have old shows, old podcasts on the website, and you have to search a little bit. If you find the program, Your Financial Choices, you'll find all the old programs. And there was one we did on risk management insurance with Eileen Budd. And what we were talking about there is risk management is one element of financial planning, just like cash flow, taxes, retirement, estate planning, investments. Risk management is one element of that, and you do need to manage that. For example, in this situation, when you say, should you consider life insurance to protect your wife who doesn't make as much money? If she would want to stay in the home, eventually maybe you might have a child or two, but if she were to stay in the home, you want her to stay in the home, that's your goal maybe for her to stay in the home, then yes, I think that that is definitely something you should consider. Just as you insure your car because you might like your car and you don't want anything to happen to that, then you definitely want to protect the asset that is giving shelter to your spouse. So you want to look at that coverage. If it's, you know, a $200,000 house, you not only want to make sure that you have enough coverage to pay for the mortgage, but you also want to make sure that you have enough coverage to pay the ongoing expenses, maintenance, real estate taxes, utilities, and other types of expenses that she'll need to have cash flow for to maintain that property or at least get her through the next stage. You know, if you anything were to happen to you were while you were young, the concept might be, well, you'd expect that she would remarry at some point. She may not. So you have to kind of hedge how much coverage you think you might need for that. But you definitely want to make sure that you factor in the present value of your earning potential as well for the next several years, you know, to make sure that you have her covered to be able to maintain the house as well as pay the mortgage. And in that regard, too, Chris, I need to ask Jeff a question first. Jeff, should we just go to the half hour? Do you want to take a break? Okay. Thank you. Apologize to the listeners. I was trying to think what I was going to add here with this, the house. I lost it. I'll have to come back now. I was concerned I was missing my break. But Chris, you do want to make sure then that you have insurance coverage for your spouse and that you may need insurance on your wife as well. Because as you said, your wife is making some money. She might not make as much as you, but she is providing and contributing to the cash flow needs for the household. So sometimes what I see happen is spouses will think, you know, we'll have insurance coverage for the higher earner and we forget about the other maybe part-time worker or the lower earner spouse. You can't forget about that. So you do want to make sure that you have coverage for each other, because if something were to happen to your wife and with her income, you're helping to maintain, you know, your car payments and all the other things that go on with living expenses, you want to make sure that you have coverage there as well. So, Chris, if I remember what else I was going to add, I'll throw it in as we go along here. Folks, we are taking listeners' questions this evening. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can call live on air or off air, whatever is most convenient. If you have questions, Judy Ann's in the studio and can write the question down and bring it in as well. All right. So we're talking about retirement accounts is one question that comes up quite often. And I had mentioned people often ask, you know, how much can I put into an IRA? How much can I put into my 401k? And I don't often see people maximizing their 401ks. Usually our really high net worth clients will maximize a 401k. Sometimes, you know, they have a little bit more discretionary income. Maybe we're not earning as much. We need more money to pay our living expenses, so we might be maxing it. One thing I strongly encourage for folks is, if you don't have any credit card debt, because I don't want you to have that either, but let's say you're managing along, we at least like you to put money into your 401k such that you get a match from an employer. If an employer will match something that you're putting in, we definitely want you to see if that works into your budget, because that's free money. But the amount that you can put into a 401k in 2014 is $17,500. If you're over 50, you can do an additional $5,500. So that's a $23,000 contribution into a 401k. Some of the ancillary ideas that go along with deciding whether or not to put money into a 401k, which I strongly suggest that people consider this, is I have seen people maximize their 401ks, but they might not have any other money or investments outside their retirement accounts. I don't think that's good planning. When we talk about asset allocation, we should talk about, you know, saving allocation. So we want you to save in a variety of vehicles as well to give you the most options as you go along in your life and can tap money if you need it. So we want to make sure that you have an emergency reserve. I've talked in the past about shows where we have asked folks consider maybe a Roth IRA if you're eligible to do that. Sometimes there's income limits on that, but that's a great way to save for an emergency, but at the same time kind of save for retirement. And you can always take out your original contributions. Keep in mind nowadays, too, for people who would not qualify for a Roth because maybe their income is too high, you always have to, let me say something here, you always have to make sure, folks, that you actually qualify for these various vehicles. So don't start putting money in IRAs and Roth IRAs without first making sure that you are eligible to do it. Sometimes if you are an employee at a company, and you make over a certain amount of money, you may not be eligible to do a deductible IRA. So you want to make sure you are within the income limits. And the IRS gives us a little breathing room here because they give us until April 15th of the year following our tax year to still make a contribution. So if you're someone who might be borderline on your income or you don't know, you can wait till after December 31st to make that decision as to whether or not to put money into the IRA. I see this with Roth IRAs too. There are income limits on Roth IRAs. So sometimes people will say, well, I don't get a deduction for the Roth anyway. The Roth is done on an after-tax basis. It grows and earns money, and eventually in a qualified distribution, it's not income taxable. So some people will think, well, I don't get a deduction for the Roth anyway, so what difference does it make if I do that? Well, if you make a contribution to the Roth and your income's too high, you have to reverse it. And the IRS gives us a little breathing room on that as well. We can reverse contributions that we weren't eligible to make by April 15th of the year following as well. So with that breathing room, if you're someone who might be borderline, why not wait until after after December 31st to see what your income looks like? Some people don't know what their income looks like. If they have wages, and let's say their wages are, you know, $170,000, and then all of a sudden they have interest, dividends, and capital gain distributions of, you know, another $10,000, and that brings them up over the threshold, but they didn't know that until like the last minute of December. That's those folks who should wait till after December 31st to make that decision. So there's lots of options with retirement accounts. You just have to be really aware of your limitations and the ability to do those. I had a couple questions come in off air, and I think I can get one to one before the break, and then the other one I'll take after the break. So Sarah from Bethlehem had called, and she said, both spouses have 401ks, and one has an IRA and a Roth. Is there anywhere else we should consider investing? So this is great. They must be both eligible for 401ks, and one has an IRA and a Roth. So sometimes, Sarah, if you have extra money and enough cash flow, what I would look to do is make sure that if your employer has a match, you want to do the 401k to get the match. Maybe then you want to put some money into the Roth. You may or may not be eligible for the IRA, the deductible IRA. It depends. You can put money, if you're eligible to do Roth contributions on top of the 401k, I'm not sure you know that both spouses could do that. And that's a point to make, folks. If one spouse doesn't work, or maybe their income is low, or they don't have an employer plan, you can do spousal IRAs or a spousal Roth IRA based on the other's earnings. Both may be eligible to do a Roth on top of a 401k. So you want to look in that. Sarah, what else to keep in mind, though? There's nothing wrong with just a regular individual brokerage account. if you have extra money, cash flow, after you have your emergency reserve, you can invest in individual accounts. What happens with that, you have, and I like that, because if you have growth and you have gains that you maybe aren't realizing, maybe you're not selling stocks or mutual funds, or if you sell them after a year, your capital gains is capped at 15%, unless you're in the top tax bracket, then it's 20%. But your capital gains tax rates also apply to your qualified dividends. And that tax rate is so much lower than ordinary income tax rates, which apply to your wages, which apply to your 401k accounts, which apply to your IRA accounts when you eventually take that money out. So I love the idea of making sure you have some investments if you have the extra money to get that qualified dividends and capital gains tax rates that are more favorable. All right, folks, we have to take a break. When we come back, we'll take more questions. The number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
And we are back. Thank you, Jeff. Folks, the phone number, if you have any questions, is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810, or through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. I want to have one follow-up to Sarah's question from Bethlehem, because she had mentioned both spouses had 401ks, IRA, Roth. Where else should they consider investing? I said, you know, an individual joint account, brokerage account, looking for capital gains. That could be an option. Remember, I have my little disclosures at the beginning of the show. Everyone should seek financial help as well. These are general questions in nature, so I want to mention that. But Sarah, if you have children, another option might be 529 plans, which are education savings accounts. In Pennsylvania, you get a deduction for up to the gift exclusion amount, which is $14,000 per child per donor. So if you and your husband have one child, you could each put $14,000 into a 529 account. And if each of you have that much income, then you would get the deduction of that amount. So that's a good deal as well, because we save 3.07% tax right away. So if there are children, that's always another option as well. And I love the idea that you have money to invest. It means you guys are probably doing a good job with your budget and saving money. It's empowering, gives you options, and that helps us make good financial decisions as well. I had another call from Kate in Bethlehem, and she said her husband has credit cards he's never planning to use. Is it better for credit score to cancel them or use them? Now, Kate, I'm not a credit specialist, but what I would probably do is, you know, you can get free reports from, is it Equifax, TransUnion, and there's one, Experian, I think. So there are credit reports you can get to see how, you know, your credit is looking. And as long as it's okay, I'm not sure it would matter. I have heard in the past sometimes what happens is if you have all these credit cards with these balances, and let's pretend, not balances, but credit where you spend, let's say, $10,000 on four different cards, and that's $40,000. I think that there have been, I have heard where people say, well, that could affect your credit score if you have all that credit available out there. I'm not sure that's exactly the case. I think that you could probably check in that. But if you're always paying off your credit cards and you're not carrying debt, I can't imagine that just because you have credit available that it would seriously or significantly impact your credit score. You can certainly check into it. But what I would say is if you cancel the credit card, I think that you can make sure that, you know, you just notify the credit card company and then just check your record to make sure it was done properly and accordingly, et cetera. So I don't know if it would hurt, but I can't imagine that it would significantly. Okay, but that's a good question, and I'll try to keep that in mind. It's been a while since I've done a show on credit, so normally when I do a show on this topic, I will research it like crazy, and it's just been a while, so I don't remember the answer off the top of my head, and I'm not sure if one of those prior shows would even be on the old podcast anymore. I'm not sure if they fall off, but definitely a good question, and I'll see if I can answer that in another upcoming show. Folks, if you have questions this evening, they've been great, by the way. I'm very excited. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And we are live. I can take questions live. We can talk together or off air, whatever you are most comfortable with. So in general, we're talking about some of the more frequent questions. Again, quite often around retirement accounts. We've talked a little bit about that tonight. We've talked a little bit about Social Security. One of the questions that comes up, and since Kate had called about credit cards, it's interesting because one of the questions that comes off up quite often is people will ask, should I pay off my debt? And well, yeah, we want people to pay off their debt, but sometimes what is the debt? What kind of debt is it? And how much is the debt costing you? So when people tell me they have credit cards, I typically we're looking at, you know, sometimes like 24%, 29%, 14%, not cheap debt. So I definitely like when people, when they have money available to pay off their credit card debt, for sure. Next week, I actually am having an author of a book called Cliff Notes Graduation Debt, How to Manage Student Loans and Live Your Life. So next week, I'm talking about that. That can be some significant debt in our lives. I've been there, and I know people who are there now. And so I thought that was a very timely topic, and we'll talk about managing student loan debt. But other debt might not be as bad. And this is where you want to, again, seek financial advice, but look at your cash flow and what things are costing you. In the past, I've talked about taking an inventory of your financial life, where you take an inventory of your assets and you look at what those assets cost you from a tax standpoint. So your house, you have a house, it's worth so much. You want to look at your liabilities, an inventory of your liabilities, and how much those are costing you. So you might have a house that might be appreciating at 2% a year. Maybe it's worth $200,000. And you have a mortgage, and your mortgage is, let's say, $100,000 a year, and your mortgage rate is 3%. 4%, I'll say 4%. And you're in a 25% tax bracket. If you get a deduction for your mortgage interest, I said it was 4%, and you are in a 25% tax bracket, that really is only costing you 3%. Okay, so in our inventory, keep in mind, you know, what debt should I pay off? If I have a house that's worth the $200,000, a loan of $100,000, 4% interest, I have a deduction, it's only costing me 3% if I'm in a 25% bracket. And then I have in my asset bucket, I have, let's pretend I have $100,000 of investments and my investments are making 8%. Okay. Do I take my $100,000 that's making 8% to pay off a loan of $100,000 that net is costing me 3%? Well, you might say, gosh, why would I do that if I'm making 8%? Well, the 8%, you're going to pay a little bit of income tax on that. Remember, I was talking to Sarah earlier, I think it was, or about the capital gains tax rates. The 8% I'm making on my $100,000 might not be costing me 25%. It might be only costing me 15% if I have capital gains rates or qualified dividends rates. So my after-tax earnings might not be 8%. They might be like, you know, 6.5%. It doesn't exactly work like that, but I'm just going to use that for simplicity. So if I'm earning net of tax 6.5 and I'm paying net of tax 3, I'm still ahead by keeping my money in investments. What you have to also factor into that when you're doing these considerations is, am I comfortable in the market? Does this meet my risk tolerance? Do I have enough emergency reserve? You know, how would I handle things if the market tanked? So I really appreciate when people have enough money on the outside to pay off debt where they can make these kinds of decisions and maybe play how the markets work and how you can leverage your money with loans and things. So you could be a little ahead in that situation. So when people ask, should I pay off my debt? It depends on what kind of debt, how much it's costing you, how much other money you have, what is your cash flow like? Lots of considerations, but definitely it's kind of fun and worth it for you to understand the, all the dynamics of that decision making. So taking an inventory of your assets, again, what it's costing you, what the net effect of your net of tax earnings are, and also what your liabilities are costing you and the net impact of that. All right, so keep that all in mind with should I pay off my debt? Another question that's been coming up most frequently is, after tax season, a lot of people will wonder, you know, where their refund is. Typically, those people who file electronically and file timely, they got their refund very quickly, usually within 2 weeks. If you do direct deposit, sometimes people will file and get a check in the mail that might take a little longer. Sometimes people will file a little late, like if they're on extension, and then they might wonder where their refund is. So you can go on the website irs.gov, and there is a button that says, where's my refund? They will ask you certain information, what year are you referring to, what your social security number is, and I think what the anticipated refund is. And then a box will pop up and say, you know, it's being processed or it was sent or, you know, there's an outline question and, you know, maybe you have to call. So they will give you some of that information. That's a nice little benefit. And keep in mind as well, there's lots of information on the IRS.gov website. I had a question, I think, a week or two ago about someone had foreign parents and were worried about foreign in-laws and were worried about what if they inherited. And I had mentioned that there may be some reporting requirements. There's a form 3520 out there that if you receive value from a foreign person of more than $100,000, foreign person, maybe a foreign trust, there is or may be some reporting requirements. So you can simply like go on the website and you can even Google sometimes this information, receipt of gift from a foreign person, and Form 3520 will probably come up. But you could also go to the IRS website and find these forms and find the instructions for them. For the callers regarding Social Security and taxation of it, you can go on the IRS's website and Google Social Security. Sometimes what happens is you get it inundated with all the information that's available. There would also be information, for example, on Social Security on their website, ssa.gov. So the beautiful thing about the internet is the access and ability to get information. What people have to be careful with is, because I'm one of those people who searches all the time, I love doing research. So what people have to be careful with, though, is it doesn't always give you all the decision-making trees that are available for your particular situation. I can't emphasize enough how each and every one of us are unique. They said this yesterday at the Women's Summit. Oh, there's never going to be another person like you. Well, that's true. And there's never going to be another person like you with your financial situation. So you can get guidance, you can get information, and sometimes you have more than one option. So what you have to do with the information that's available to you is make the best decision you can with that information and make an informed decision. So that's why we do this show. We talk about options and give you ideas and hope that you can get pointed in the right direction. I'm always imagining a pool table and the balls on the table and the cue ball and, you know, hitting it in a particular direction. So whenever I talk about these things, that's what you can go off in one direction and it would work, and you can go off in another direction and that way could work too. So you have to make the best decision for you with the information available. Folks, if you have questions this evening, it is listeners' questions tonight. And luckily, I've had enough callers that we've had plenty of questions. There are some questions that I've had from prior shows that I can go over as well. And so when we come back from the break, I could cover some of those. There were some very interesting questions that come up from time to time. So if they're common enough, I want to cover those. But if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. There's still plenty of time. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 79 degrees under fair skies. Tonight, heavy rain expected, lows around 60. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, sunny skies with highs each day in the lower 80s. The time now is 6:45. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thanks, Jeff. And I remembered what I wanted to add for Chris from Bethlehem, who called about the life insurance for covering the mortgage on the home in case something happens to him, if he wanted to protect his wife. If Chris is still listening, I wanted to talk about the difference in life insurance. So some of the questions, I actually was talking about this right before the show, Chris, and one of the other questions that had come up was, what is the difference between whole life and term life? So that is something you might want to look at as well. You may be young and not sure what your cash flow looks like. Whole life insurance might be a bigger budget item than you have the capability to manage. So term insurance is something that typically is more affordable, doesn't cost as much because it's for a particular term, a particular period of time. Sometimes it could be 20 years, 25 years, or up to age 70 or 75. And it's for a certain term. And the reason it's cheaper is because there is no benefit if in 5 years you stop it or 10 years you stop it. You did not build up any value. There's no return on that investment to you. It was simply a term for a period of time. Quite often, I would like to see people do that for at least the period of that debt until you either have accumulated other assets to cover that liability or the mortgage is paid off and you no longer have the liability. So you want to kind of, you know, monitor that as you go. A whole life policy is something where you make an investment in an insurance contract and you may have, you know, you build up some value in it. It's called cash value. So over time, if you eventually don't need that policy anymore, you may have built up some value in that policy that should you surrender it, you may get something back out of it. That is something that can be illustrated and you want to look at it. The cost of that, though, is higher. So there's a higher cost to that kind of policy, and sometimes it's sold with the benefit of, oh, you could borrow from it, but there's consequences of that as well. I'm not an insurance agent, so that is something you would have to discuss with an insurance agent, but that's basically the differences. So if you are going to look at life insurance, you want to look at the different kinds of policies and what works for you and what works within your budget and for your time period and your needs. Okay, Chris? So I hope that you were still listening to get that. Folks, if you have questions, we still have time. The phone number is 610-758-8810 or through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. If I can't get to questions tonight through that, I will respond when I can. which would probably be tomorrow. So a couple options for you. And again, we are live on air or off air, whatever is most comfortable for you. So we talked about Social Security. We talked about paying off debt. We talked about the differences in life insurance and where life insurance might be appropriate. We talked a little bit about retirement accounts. These are some of the more common types of questions. Another question that comes up quite often is, you know, do I need a trust? And what are the differences in trust? And, you know, my friends said I need a trust. This is a common topic of conversation with my mother. Her friends are always telling her, oh, you need a trust, because someone has told them that they need a trust. Remember what we were just saying earlier. This is to help you make informed decisions. Just because something applies to one person, your neighbor, your friend, your coworker, doesn't mean it necessarily applies to you. And you don't have to show your cards either. You don't necessarily have to say, oh, I don't have any money, or I don't have anything that would go in trust. You just can, you know, say, well, I'll talk to my financial advisor about that. So you don't necessarily have to agree or disagree with someone when they're trying to give you suggestions. I have no problem with people having conversations and talking. I love being informed, and I like, you know, getting people's opinions, but it doesn't mean you necessarily have to act on them. So first let me tell you just briefly what kind of trust people are typically talking about when they say, oh, you need a trust, you need a trust. This is while they're alive. And that is something called a living trust. It has a bunch of different names. It can have a bunch of different names. But typically we say a living trust is a revocable trust, one that you can revoke while you're alive. And a living trust, a revocable trust, is one that you have retained so much control over that any assets in that trust you can still take back, or you still control. Sometimes people will set up a trust during their lifetime out of concern of managing those assets in the event that they lose capability, capacity, mental capacity, physical capacity. So if folks have that concern, or maybe a husband thinks their wife won't be able to handle it, or a wife thinks their husband won't be able to handle it, I'm not going to judge here, you might set up a trust and have yourself as the trustee during lifetime, but at your death, you know, maybe a child steps in or is a co-trustee, or, you know, the surviving spouse could be a trustee if it's a certain kinds of trust. So revocable trust, living trust, that's something that you still retain control over. Again, typically I see that more for management purposes. It also sometimes is advertised or promoted as a way to avoid probate or, you know, tax savings. It's not a tax saving vehicle if you've maintained control over it for inheritance tax purposes. In Pennsylvania, we still have an inheritance tax. New Jersey, we still have an inheritance tax. So it may make it probate, but what you're saving there is simply probate fees. If you've retained control, it's still going to be includable in your estate. The value of it is still going to be includable in your estate for inheritance tax purposes. So it's not a huge necessarily money saver in that regard as well, because probate costs aren't that high in this area. They're fairly low. So you really want to, if your friends are talking about this, if people are talking about this, you really want to consult an attorney. And what I'll add is you really probably should consult an attorney in our local area. You know, years and years ago, I remember I worked at a law firm, and at the time there were these outfits that would come in from out of town, these, you know, I don't know what you'd call them, hit and runs, where they would come in and they'd have seminars and they'd sell these $2,500 books to folks with all their estate planning documents. But that outfit would, you know, leave town and not necessarily make sure that everything was followed through with or executed properly. So, you know, I would caution that it really is a good idea to find a local professional that you're comfortable with, that you can work with and call if you need. So That is a revocable trust. Occasionally, you will see irrevocable trust. That's where I irrevocably give something to a trust. I'm gifting it. I have lost control over it, and that's going to get it out of my estate. Typically, you might do something like that if, you know, for estate planning, maybe someone has subject to estate taxes and they want to reduce their estate. So you could make an irrevocable gift to a trust. And there's other reasons as well. So lots of information around trust. We did a show with Judy Harris a few weeks ago on estate planning. I think we talked a little bit about trust there. Again, always a good idea to consult an attorney, work with an attorney before you do anything, irreversible. Okay. Now, I just wanted to kind of go over a couple questions that had come up in the past. It's been a while, not that long of a while, but a little while ago. Life insurance policy, someone had called. They had two companies. They went through a demutualization process. I don't even remember answering this question from back when, but some of you might have stock in some of these insurance companies like MetLife or Prudential, and you don't even know why you have it or where you got it. Well, years ago, if you had a life insurance policy with some of these companies, they were mutual fund companies, they demutualized, they became stock companies, and to the extent you had policies, they put a value on that and equated it to certain shares of stock in the company, and then you received those shares. So a lot of people still have those. So if you see dividends coming in on some of these life insurance stocks that you have, that could be what that's from. There was some questions and confusion about what the cost basis was in those stocks. Some people are just holding on to them forever. If you die holding those, you get a step up in basis to the fair market value on the date of death. Then it doesn't matter, you know, what the confusion was, because now we have basis and we know if we sell it, it's based on the value at date of death, whether there's a gain or loss on it. But for folks who sell that type of life insurance stock in those companies where there was that confusion, the IRS originally was saying the cost basis was zero through the demutualization. Someone brought a case and argued that it was the fair market value on the date of the transfer. So you want to be careful if you're selling that on what position you're going to take. We had a caller call in, Gina from Colorado. Wow, that's pretty cool. I hope she's can hear me. She says, is it bad for my credit to transfer balances from one card to another for lower interest? Well, Gina, I would say that there may be an impact. Again, I'm not a credit expert. There may be an impact, but if you think it through, if you're not increasing your balance, I would not think that it would have that much of an impact because you didn't increase your liabilities or your debt. And for me, if it's to lower your interest and you continue to pay off your credit cards and are able to pay off your credit cards, then I think that's a win for you. Your credit is going to matter. Your credit score will matter for future use if you go to apply for a loan for a home, possibly if you're renting, you know, and your landlord does a credit check. Things like that is why you want to have a good credit score, to give you the best options and available rates when you go to apply for a big loan. But if you're not in that situation, in my opinion, lowering your interest rate is a priority, because if you're able to pay off your cards faster, I think that's a great idea. So, Gina, what I wouldn't want to see is you transferring to avoid paying, or with the lower interest rate, it would lower your monthly amount. I would want to see you paying at least as much or more to still work down your credit completely, because that will be the best thing for your credit score, is to pay down that credit. And that's also a reminder for a lot of folks that you do need to build up credit sometimes so that you can eventually qualify for loans and things like that when you need them. So I hope that helps, Gina, and I hope that you continue to pay off credit card balances. That would be a good thing for you. All right. Hey, listeners, great show tonight. I always worry before I come to the studio how it's going to go. Jeff told me it was going to be great. I love the questions, love the callers, love the listeners. So I want to thank you a lot. It's a lot more fun for me, and it makes it a little bit more interesting, I think, for everyone, because there's such good questions that come in. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, Judy Ann, for being here and furiously writing down all the questions. I appreciate that. Next week, I will have a timely conversation with Raina Goble, MBA, MJ, the author of Cliff Notes, Graduation Debt, How to Manage Student Loans and Live Your Life. And it's her second edition. Raina is a journalist, author, and professional speaker who's been quoted by Money Magazine, Real Simple, and the Washington Post. So she is coming with lots of information. She's forwarded the book to me, so I'm going to be busily reading that today, tonight, tomorrow, and hope we have a great show next week. And that applies to a lot of folks, not just yourself, but maybe your children, maybe your future children, maybe your grandchildren. Thanks again, listeners. Thanks, Judy Ann. Thanks, Jeff. Stay tuned for In the Tradition Folk Music with Tom Druckenmiller. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.